Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Hello, everybody. Happy Monday to you. And I just want to welcome you. I'm chuckling because we're experiencing challenging. We have Andy Elvey that normally does a fabulous job, but they're having technology difficulties. So I'm running the panel here as well as doing what we're doing here. So doing the presentation. So I apologize to anyone in advance for this program. But we welcome you. We're thrilled to have you. We thank you so much for being a part of this. Again, what I would encourage you to do is send the word around to everybody out there about this program, because there's so much information that you're going to get and we're going to be digesting for you. And let's start off, as we always do at the top of the program, about interest rates. Let's get into it. We are blessed to have Joe Farr with MBS Quoteline on the line. And Joe, last week I was up in New Hampshire at a beautiful spot in Hampton Beach, and we have a client up there, and I said, you guys got to use this service called MBS Quoteline. They go, we do.
They were
bragging about what a great service you have. So there's another one. Guys is still using Brand X out there, but he says, man, it's so expensive, yours is so much better. So anyway, let's get into the program today. And I do welcome our client Blue Water Mortgage from up there in beautiful New Hampshire. They're listening in, Joe. Let's get into interest rates. MBS prices are kind of flat, not a lot of significance going on in the market. I'm logged into your website right now. Let's get into it. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, not much going on today. No economic announcements so far today. We did open a little bit lower and saw a little improvement in prices early before a lot of you got price sheets today, but it's been in a pretty tight range since then. This morning's Fannie Mae required net yield, which is a very good gauge for movement day to day in mortgage rates. This morning, their required net yield was at the lowest level it's been since late May, so the lowest level in about 4 months. And so we are enjoying nice little improvement rates over the summer, and everyone ought to really encourage their customers to understand these are low mortgage rates, and if you're sitting around waiting for them to get lower, you may just wait too long.
Yeah, that's so true. That's a great point. These are the best times to be out there and talking about it, and we need to keep the real estate market keep people out there buying or refinancing. And this, I mean, all of a sudden, Joe, we could see ourselves another refinance surge, kind of like what we had earlier.
Yeah. Not like we saw in 2003, obviously, but certainly it's nice when we've seen a drop in rates. And yeah, last week we had a very nice movement in rates, Dave. The rates fell a little bit, not a lot, but really everything that happened last week was good for mortgage rates. I hate to say it, but the less than stellar economic news that came out last week were good for mortgage rates, you know, with the new and existing home sales not quite meeting expectations. And in fact, existing home sales fell for the first time in 4 months. That was not good for home sales, obviously, but good for mortgage rates. And durable orders came in much, much below what was expected and what was in the month before. Largely due to a real change in the amount of, I think it was airplane orders that really caused June to be high and July to be low, or I may have that backwards, July and August. But, that too was favorable for mortgage rates.
Do you mean, Joe, you canceled your new jet order?
Yeah, I got to get up and see our customers up in New Hampshire. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I'm ready for one of us to buy a jet because it took a little while to get up there. It was worth it, but it took a little while. But anyway, there's a lot going on as last week as far as it relates to the Treasury auction and then what the Feds are doing. There was a significant announcement. Let's get into that because that is going to have an impact on interest rates.
Yeah, the Fed announcement was twofold. One was as it relates to the economic activity. They reported, as many of you have seen, I'm sure, that the economic recovery is proceeding nicely, and most importantly, inflation is tame. They anticipate that they will be able to keep their short end rates low for an extended period of time. And so, you know, basically they're saying we're seeing an improving economy and no inflation, which is very good on both fronts, good for stocks, good for bonds. The other thing that they said, which is of utmost importance to our industry, is regarding the mortgage-backed security purchase program. As we've talked about on this show, you know, that program represents $1.25 trillion worth of purchases during 2009 and now extended into a little bit into 2010, which I'll talk about in a minute. But that $1.25 trillion is a huge percentage of what is being produced and sold in the market today. Some estimates are it's 80% of everything, every new mortgage-backed security that's put together. And by the way, almost every loan being made today is being put into either a Ginnie Mae, a Fannie Mae, or a Freddie Mac mortgage-backed security. So a very, very large percentage of every loan made today is being purchased by the Fed as they are buying up these mortgage-backed securities. And what they said in the announcement, Dave, was that the $1.25 trillion that they had announced they were going to buy is not changing. It's just going to be extended out a quarter.
And that's important, Joe, because there was some talk about them backing down and not fulfilling that agreement. So they've indicated they are going to fulfill their commitment to the 1.25, right?
Right. And really what they said, I think, was about as good as what they could say for the mortgage industry. They could have said, and a couple of the Fed governors had voiced a desire to possibly stop short of the $1.25 trillion, to extract themselves from the market in a more abrupt way would have been very difficult for mortgage rates. Would have most likely pressured mortgage rates higher, and their stated purpose for extending the time was to avoid what are likely going to be disruptions in the marketplace, in the mortgage market. So, you know, they certainly want to make it happen, and they can help control to a certain extent what does happen, but we also don't want them to continue forever.
No. We've got to see the other investors come in. But with them buying so quickly and aggressively in the market, I mean, there's been concern or questions, not concern, but questions about how many other investors are there. So if there was an abrupt stop, we would find out quickly to the extent that they're going to ease out. Is it over the next 6 to 9 months, Joe, something like that?
6 months, yeah.
And if is that starting from the January they're going to ease out?
No. They're going to start now. They announced that it was going to be effective starting with last week. Now, last week they purchased, I think it was $22 billion, which is slightly less than what they had been buying before. And but, you know, as they ease themselves out, they were spending at a pace at $25 billion a week, they were going to run out in December.
Right.
So they're going to start spending less than that, and ultimately, you know, they might become 50% of the market. Well, when you're 80% of the market, you dominate. You dictate what's going to happen, where the prices are set. When you reduce your participation and when you become less significant, you're now just a participant in the market, and you're pretty much dealing with what the market causes you to deal with. And so it's expected that over this time period, we'll see rates rise, everything else being held the same. I was reading something where Credit Suisse thinks that rates would be about 35 basis points higher once the government has extracted themselves out of the market, and you know that may be may be right, may be wrong, but it's pretty well generally accepted that we should see rates go a little higher once the Fed's out.
Well, I think it's encouraging to know that there's buyers still out there that will still keep the markets going. It's so critical. If we only have a 35 bips rise in interest rates, then, I mean, we're still at almost historical lows. And so that is not going to have the negative impact that has been feared by some and talked about a bit in the press. So that's good news. Should bodes well. This week on the calendar, we have a jobs report. And what else do we have going on?
Well, always the jobs report's important. That's Friday. And expectations are that the economy is going to lose about 190,000 jobs. I know that's still a lot, but it's less than we had been and would be showing a continuous path toward improving and a path toward beginning to create jobs. What's always important is not so much what the number is, but how much is the number different than what was expected. So if we're expecting 190, let's watch the number on Friday and see if it's close. And if it misses by a lot, either way, it could create some significant volatility.
Go ahead.
Just the other things. There are two other things that are sort of significant on the calendar for the week we're in right now. And two manufacturing indices: the Chicago PMI will come out on Wednesday, and the ISM or the Institute of Supply Management comes out on Thursday. And those would be a good indicator of manufacturing activity, and could help to determine if you know what we've seen as sort of a reversal of the positive trends for economic activity that we saw last week. Are we going to see them again this week? And if we see more weakness in those two announcements, we could see rates improve a little bit.
Well, that's encouraging to see that. And I tell you, everybody, I'm looking at the calendar that they have, that MBS Quoteline has on their website. It's information that's so pertinent and probably one of the best sources for concise, up-to-the-minute information on what's going on. Joe, thank you so much for being a part of it. How's Scott doing? I want to hear. We miss him being in and on the calls, and I know he's been really busy lately, but
yes.
Be sure to greet him from us and tell him
we
how much we miss having him on the program. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
All right, everybody. Now for the Hobbit legislative update. As we do every week in the program, we talk about rates and then we go to the next hot topic. What in the world is the government doing to us now? Welcome back. We missed you last week, Alice, and it's good to have you back on the program, as always.
Oh,
sorry
thanks,
to hear about Dave. Sorry to hear about all the technology challenges you guys are having around there. Yes, but it's good to have you on. Thank God for old analog phones and all that sort of stuff. It still works, but good to have you on. Let's go through the issues related to the legislative update. H.R. 3146. Sounds like there's some things happening there.
Yeah, we finally got some movement on one of these pieces of legislation, and it is good to be back, by the way. It's you know, we've been watching this laundry list of legislation sit as we waited to, you know, everybody focused on health care. So finally, the 21st Century FHA Housing Act of 2009 passed the House on the 16th. We don't necessarily see a companion bill yet sitting in the Senate. You know, it's funny how many times you say to people, oh, wait, something passed the House, and everybody starts running around going, oh, does that mean I have to start doing that right now? No, that's just one piece of the puzzle. So we don't see a companion bill in the Senate yet, but according to the notes, it does look like it's been read, this version. What this means is it really gives FHA some additional tools, some additional budget money for training of employees and for information technology. It is going to I think the biggest thing in there is authorize HUD to coordinate a program to assist with warehouse lines. I haven't heard a lot of people comment on how that actually is going to work. It might be in the form of maybe direct loans, maybe a little bit like rural development and how they assist with the loans. Yeah. You know, if you, any of you might be familiar with Farm Home Administration, Rural Housing Service loans, those you work directly with them. So I don't know, maybe there'll be a program along that line. But and this will only apply for FHA, VA, Fannie, Freddie products as they decide how they can fit into that market.
Well, the it's good that they're needing additional staff. They're adding 90 employees is what I believe your notes indicated.
Yep.
And it sounds like that's just like a drop in the bucket. I can't remember how many. I mean, I've been back in their offices, and it seems like you just walk the halls of HUD,
right,
and they go and go. So 90 employees, but I'll tell you, they need all the help they can get. And is that 90 employees just going to HUD, or is that HUD and Ginnie Mae? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure how Ginnie Mae fits into that. It really is just an appropriations piece for HUD as a whole, and how it stacks out underneath that we know is really geared towards accommodating the FHA loan program. So I'm not sure how Ginnie Mae fits into that. By the way, in the staff, they're also looking at planning on hiring a chief risk officer. So that was good news as well that came out of Commissioner David Stevens to let us know that, you know, they need somebody who's watching the risk right now at FHA. And I guess our biggest thing with them is just all the mortgagee letters they've been giving us.
Oh, I know, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment because it's a lot of hot issues. It's outside the legislative update, so we're going to put that in the next session or in the next segment. But it's interesting to see how significant the drop has been in the housing in that FHA fund. I mean, there's a lot of concern about the ongoing viability of this, which is relating to a lot of these changes that are coming up. I think also it's going to have an impact in legislation. And is there any updates on any of the other bills that we can have? I don't believe there's been a lot of movement on any of it, but certainly have to be paying attention to it.
No, the only other thing is obviously October 1st, so this week is when the remaining Truth in Lending Act requirements go into effect that were actually passed some time ago. So beginning October 1st is the high-priced mortgage loan requirements go into effect. We have a new, tighter definition for an application and some new advertising rules, so just implementation of a piece of legislation. Just my thought on the moratorium for the Home Valuation Code of Conduct. People have been anxiously hoping that piece of legislation will move. I think in light of FHA's new mortgagee letter that they've jumped on this bandwagon with similar policies to HVCC, I don't think that piece is going to move anywhere now.
Wow, that's interesting. And the countdown for the the comment period for the Truth in Lending?
Yeah, for our Truth in Lending.
How many days? 88 days. We're coming up with our new website for the Lincoln and Lending program. I think we're going to have a countdown for each one of these things. You got to get in there and get your comments in.
Yep.
But we appreciate you so much, Alice, for digesting all of this. And it's just so significant. And again, we encourage everybody to get a hold of their respective representatives and get in there and talk about it. Let's take a brief break for this word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Well, there's so much happening out there, and we want to get into what some of the other talking topics that we were, some of the other topics that we want to get into. I wish you guys could see the notes that get sent to me by Alice and Joe. They really are out there each day, each week, looking for the topics that we need to be addressing, and I'm thrilled. Thank you so much to both of you guys for this. One of the things I just want to say is I just hit the send button on an article that'll be coming out on marketing. It'll be appearing in this month's issue of the National Mortgage Professional. I want to thank Andrew for letting us, Berman, for allowing us to publish in that. And I'm talking about marketing. And I talk in that article about nothing has changed, but everything's new. If you have not subscribed to that magazine, get a copy of it. Get on their website. You can see some of the past articles. But get active in that and find out what we're saying. There's some neat articles. Another article that's coming out that I encourage each of you to read. It's called The Future of Mortgage Banking. That is going to be in the Secondary Marketing Executive issue in October. That's the cover page article. It's the one I wrote for the conference. And also at the MBA conference in San Diego, I am moderating a panel about the future, what the future holds for the independent mortgage banker. And so I'm moderating the panel. We've got some outstanding panelists, and we're actually going to try to get them on the program the week before the conference. So anyway, Alice, Joe, let's get into some of the other topics. Alice, you brought out in the last segment about the FHA issues, the fact that they're issuing, they have issues with their fund. That's one thing. Maybe that was a slip. They definitely have issues with the insurance fund, and there's lots of alarms, bells, and whistles going off in the mind of a lot of people. And but it is encouraging to see that they're stepping up their as a result of the FHA Housing Act of 2009, they're stepping up their commitment to housing and FHA specifically. But they issued a lot of letters, 10 mortgagee letters in the last 10 days. I mean, that's a little bit that feels a little bit like a tsunami of new letters.
Yeah,
let's get
it
into
is. Well, it is. You just think, oh, my gosh, okay, I'm just now finishing reading this one, and two more are coming over your email. But, no, we love FHA and are really happy to see that they're trying to address some of the risks that they have and really trying to get some aspects under control. I mean, certainly it was different that we had this home valuation code of conduct with who can order appraisals and how we have to manage that and independence of the appraiser for our conventional loans and not for our FHAs. And they did come out with a policy. And I think what's interesting in that one mortgagee letter where they are stressing appraiser independence, so effective for January 1st, case numbers, you might as well treat all your loans the same way under the Home Valuation Code of Conduct. But FHA took it a step further to talk about compensation. You know, for a long time, people have looked at appraisal management companies that maybe pay their appraisers much less than the standard fee. And FHA does have that FHA-approved lenders must ensure that appraisers are not, that the appraisers are being compensated at a rate that's customary and reasonable for their services. So it'll be interesting to see how that part pans out.
That, and then also about streamlines. Am I reading this right? Bye-bye FHA streamlines that we all knew, as you said, as we all knew them and loved them.
I know. Everybody loves streamlines. It was the easiest loan to teach somebody how to do if you were a mortgage processor. Here, get these few pieces of paper. You don't have to document income. You don't have to document assets, and you don't have to really document credit. And, you know, then as long as it's a good FHA, you can turn around and roll it over FHA. Well, all that's disappearing January 1st. Case numbers. I'm sorry, no, 60 days 60 from the
days.
Date of this letter. So April, November 18th case numbers, the streamline program is going to be like a little mini documented loan. You're going to have to make sure the customer didn't have more than 1x30 in the last 12 months. You will have to make sure that we don't have a combined loan-to-value over 125%, whereas before FHA had no limit. And then they want to see a pay stub, make sure that the borrower at least has a job. So, you know, I think for the most part, many lenders have put in their own credit overlays already on FHA streamlined.
Yes.
Some even have minimum credit scores, but this takes it a step further.
Yeah, so it's not that, Alice, it's important we brought this distinction. And one person just texted me and said, "I mean, streamlines are going away altogether?" No, they are there. The streamlines process is going to be there, but they're making changes to what's the documentation that's going to be going into them.
Yeah, and there's going to have to, so just the quick bullets are that, you know, there's going to, the borrower must have made at least 6 payments on the loan before you refi. You know, that's new. Yeah. It used to be you could do a streamline as soon as you got it insured. If rates were lower, you could streamline refi the customer. Also, before, FHA never had a maximum number of mortgage late payments, and that's how we used to do. You know, if I'm a XYZ lender and I've got a customer who's 2 or 3 times 30 in the last 12 months, but it's my FHA, I think they've gotten themselves back on track. We, you know, we're doing a loan that's a benefit to the borrower. Let's roll that over into a new FHA at a lower rate. We could do those, but in this new world, it's going to be restricted to no more than 1 times 30 in the last 12 months. So that to me is one of the biggest changes for customers who may have had a little hiccup in their payment history over the last year or so. That's going to be a little tighter for them. And making sure it's a net tangible benefit, you know, so that is something that aligns with many requirements already on other products.
There is the HECMs, the reverse mortgage component of FHA, also has some changes. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was a change in the table that they used to determine the principal limit, and I haven't had a chance to go check that out yet. We have a person on staff who's our HECM expert, and I meant to check with him. I can follow up on that for you next call to kind of see how that is. They think will be impacting loan limits, but I'm assuming it'll bring them down, and it'll limit how much the reverse mortgage loan amounts will be able to be for borrowers.
Yeah, I'm reading on the National Mortgage News has a headline up here. Lenders rushing to close HECMs before deadline, which is effective October 1st. The proceeds on the FHA-insured reverse mortgages will be reduced by 10%, a swift policy change that has spurred lenders to beat the deadline so their clients can borrow more money. So anyway, it's interesting what all the changes. That was ML, Mortgage E Letter 34. Let's move on to Mortgagee Letter 35. Servicers are getting slapped around. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, you know, that FHA was citing in a Mortgagee Letter that the modifications have resulted in an increase in monthly payments to the borrower in some cases because they've extended the term and haven't really reduced the interest rate. So this was interesting that they actually are coming out and setting a limit of an interest rate that can't be more than 50 basis points above the current market rate, and the loan must be amortized over 360 months as opposed to, you know, just re-amortizing it within the existing term that was remaining. So if you're a homeowner, it's good news to be able to say, okay, that means they'll spread my FHA back out if I need to. And certainly in servicing, it's always case by case. Every loan is different. And so the servicers will have to dissect that policy. The other big one is really 0931 with strengthening FHA's lender approval requirements.
Yes, that was really interesting.
Yeah, they're going to be really, you know, so now if you've been convicted of a felony in any real estate mortgage or any real estate lending activity, anything dishonest or breach of trust, money laundering, any act of fraud ever, you're not getting into the FHA program.
Period.
And then it's a 7-year window for any licensing or registration violations.
Well, when we were up in New Hampshire last week, we talked about what's going on in Massachusetts, where they're now tightening up. If anyone has had bad credit, bad bankruptcies, you can't get licensed in some of the states. So, I mean, are they taking some of that too far? Certainly, you can say if someone's done money laundering, has really violated a trust, especially when the government's standing behind it, yeah, I can buy into that one. When someone has a credit, I mean, this does not go into the credit issues. It's just if they have been convicted for a felony charge. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, felony, and then in two buckets. There's the 1 7-year prohibition if it was related to licensing or registration, and then the other one for act of fraud. So, they don't get into what some have termed as you're trying to, you know, get licensed by state as college indiscretions.
Yeah. Of course, none of us would ever be accused of any of that. Oh, Lord, we don't want to go there. Thank God those college days are far, far behind us.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is so important to bring. Go ahead, Joe, jump in. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say there's also a major increase in the net worth requirements. Is that part of this?
Well,
the same one?
So they actually, right now it was $250,000, but they're proposing to raise it to $1 million. That was in Mr. Stevens' discussion in an announcement. So that this particular mortgagee letter doesn't actually implement that $1 million in capital that they're talking about, but I would expect lenders should see that happen. You better start now, because that's one way they're trying to mitigate their risks. And what's interesting is that there were in the rumor mill with that was were they still going to approve brokers?
Yes, just reading that on the newsflash on that. Yeah, and it appears that they're not.
Right. Would it be okay? We're going to make the big lenders have to be bigger, and then we're not going to regulate the little companies anymore.
Yeah, and then it's not that they're saying you can't deal with them, but they're basically doing away with what has been commonly referred as the mini Eagle program. Again, that's what's rumored. They're not anything coming out official on that. So I made that statement the other day to someone. They said, "You mean they're doing away with it?" And I go, "No, this is what the rumor mill is having out there." But this one, oftentimes, the way the government works. Is they will float a rumor to see what the consequences are. In other words, let's say we'll discuss it internally. We think this is a good idea, but we're not sure that we're getting everything. So they'll leak a rumor out to kind of draw the feedback from the rest of the community to see what's coming in. So rumor has it, they're dialed into their comments that they're hearing on this program.
You're going to get differences of opinion on how wholesalers feel about they're going to be 100% liable for the brokers.
Well, I think there's an increased liability coming down on brokers on the licensing. And a lot of the wholesalers have already tightened up the language in their broker agreements that they're already signing. And a lot of states now are, and there's talk federally about pushing accountability down to the broker. So it may be a moot point with some of the other legislation that is pending at both of the state and federal levels. But the big concern is, are they there? Are they sending a signal is FHA sending a signal out to the market saying we are no longer supporting the broker? That is not what we're hearing here, but they're pushing the liability all on the wholesaler, the person that's funding the loan, and actually taking, is the mortgage banker, and in that sense of the word. So that's what seems to be. Again, these are all rumors. But the capital requirements one, we have some tracks into the inside halls of FHA, and it appears that rumor is well-founded and that it is possible by the end of this year you'll see a $1 million net worth requirement as a minimum. They're debating, what I've heard, is that they're debating the quote, it comes from reliable sources, that they are debating, that will go unnamed, they're debating whether or not they should escalate it up over net worth requirements. So everyone that is approved on a full Eagle basis will have a 12-month period to get their net worth up, similar to what Fannie and Freddie did on their net worth requirements when they went from the 250 to 2.5 million. The $2.5 million requirement. So they did a quantum leap from 250 to 1.5 as of July of this year, and then by the end of this year, I believe you have to be at 250 on that. So it's interesting what's going on out there. Certainly a lot of movement as it relates to net worth, and again, more thinly capitalized companies. A lot of folks are saying, what should my capital requirements be at? When we're advising clients, we're telling everybody, get north of $3 million net worth if you plan to be a mortgage banker, and ideally to get north of $5 million. And doing so is not as impossible as that may sound. And if you have any questions on that, give us a call. We would love to give you an explanation on that. Let's take a quick break for this word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It's good to have you back. This is Dave Licken, Licken on Lending, and we look forward to talking to you more about all this. Get this word out. We appreciate this, you passing this on to all of your friends in the marketplace out there. Again, a lot of what we're trying to do is be digesting all these issues and give you ideas of how you should respond in light of this. So we appreciate your staying with us. Joe, you and I were talking before the program about Barney Frank's proposal and some things with Senator Dodd. Give us a quick report on that.
Well, it's just updates to, like, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency is still being promoted among Barney Frank and his committee. As these things always do, they don't, you know, they go through a process, and part of that process may appear to be favorable in that they're limiting somewhat the scope and the power of the agency from what was originally proposed, and they're also eliminating the requirement to ensure that products be plain vanilla. You know, they got a lot of criticism for that because they seem to be eliminating the ability to innovate and to create new products. And so as much as this is still a controversial proposal to create this Consumer Financial Protection Agency, it seems to be evolving toward a better solution than what
is there anyone else more controversial that could introduce controversial legislation than
Yeah, not really, no.
And so I kind of think, you know, if we want to have it sound controversial, they draw straws. They go, sorry, Barney, you got the short controversial straw. You got to introduce this one. And you know what? You sit and look at this guy, and a lot of us that are probably consider ourselves more on the conservative side of the spectrum look at him and have discounted it. The more I listen to this guy, don't worry, folks, I'm not turning, you know, I'm not going to the other side of the aisle on this. But the reality is he is trying to get some proposals out there. If you will set down partisanship and listen to some of the things he's trying to get across, I mean, I would encourage you to do that as much with an open mind. Beware, though. There's a lot more being buried inside these deals than what's been talked than what's being discussed as the real motive here. So stay tuned on that. I listened to recently Barney Frank and Bill O'Reilly go at it again on O'Reilly's program, and it was really interesting to listen. Barney's actually, there's times where I'm going, you know what, I'm going to listen more, a little bit more what he said. And it was interesting because when I was on Fox recently, I was talking, had a conversation with Peter Barnes, a sidebar conversation with Peter Barnes, on who's the chief correspondent for Fox inside of the Beltway. And he says, you know what, Dave, he is actually a pretty nice guy. He's got liberal ideas, and I encourage you next time you're back here to sit down with him. Because a lot of the things, he really is a very intelligent man, and he's trying to do something relatively intelligent, you know, partisanship, you know, partisan politics aside. But it was interesting. But let's move over to Senator Dodd. There's been a develop on that one as well. Joe?
Well, Senator Dodd is proposing, and again, this is very early in the process, and has a lot of people that have said they don't like the idea, but that is to create a single regulator by merging the four agencies that are out there now into one, the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, and the OCC, and the OTS, all into one entity. And boy, that would be a behemoth of a regulator, wouldn't it? I
mean, wow.
That would be huge. That is. Yeah, when you talk about the Big Brother effect, I mean, you begin to wonder what's behind that. And Sheila Frank has come out real solidly against that, and a number of them have said, no way. You know, they say, well, that's protecting turf. So they, but, you know, Alice, how does that hit you? I mean,
Well, I'm just interested in, you know, trying to see, everybody's trying to think that does another regulator solve the problem? And, you know, someone has to prove that point to me, that having one regulator or one centralized point somehow would change that, we wouldn't have the same thing happen again, where you have mortgage products that end up having such a dramatic effect on the economy because of so many layers. I mean, I hear them picking on our industry an awful lot. I'd like to hear them pick on the securities side a little bit more for their role in all of this, because none of these
Absolutely.
Regulators touch that side of the problem.
It's absolutely the case. Again, these are things that are being talked about. We want to bring them forward on this. There's another topic I want to get into, Alice, which was in your notes, and it has to do with MERS. We're watching the court rulings. There's been some developments there. If you could get into that with us briefly.
Well, I just wanted to give you, to us it was interesting to see the Kansas Supreme Court ruling now about a month ago that stated that MERS is not a necessary party to a foreclosure action. So for those of you who might not be familiar with the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, is a service that's been around for many years and actually helps the mortgage industry. You know, I've seen articles that were very slanted about, we're just saving a bunch of money, we just do it to save money. But it really does add efficiency to
Yes.
the assignment process and moving loans, as much as loans move between investors and are sold. Well, apparently, in a foreclosure process in Kansas that was being contested, the borrower going through foreclosure, the first lien holder filed, for their rights under the foreclosure action, and the second lien holder sold the loan during the process or somewhere about there. And so the new second lien holder's interest weren't protected, and they're blaming that on the MERS. Because it was MERS on the note, and not that the second lien holder didn't actually have their name on it. So to try and simplify it a little bit, at the end of the day, the judge was saying, well, this second lien holder doesn't have any rights because they weren't represented properly during the proceedings. This is the first time that a case that I'm aware of has ruled kind of unfavorably towards MERS, and so there's just been some talk on, should we watch this? One, now everybody knows in Kansas, you better be careful and double-check your filings, but what kind of impact, if any, would this have on the rest of the country? So we're just watching each of the, it seems like more and more of these, that an attorney is using the fact that the loan's been reported with MERS as a way to maybe get somebody out of foreclosure.
Yeah,
or out of a particular lien. Joe, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I was going to say a vast majority of loans made today are tracked via MERS. And for that to not be a legitimate way to track, and if the lien associated with the loans that have been tracked via MERS is not enforceable, it's unimaginable what would happen.
Right.
And the bottom line is that the consumer is going to wind up paying more if MERS, as a way of creating efficiency, is determined to not work. I was a big advocate for MERS early on, and it really helps to maintain the efficiency of the process, and in the end, it helps to maintain clean releases, and everyone works out much easier.
Well, yeah, because human error certainly is a lot, or was before MERS, a lot more of a problem for lenders. So Rhode Island since then has ruled
yes.
in favor of MERS. You know, so it's really, it was just unusual to see this happen in Kansas, and so we're just keeping an eye on for it. We'll keep reporting for you.
Well, you have to just understand also how Kansas has ruled in some other matters related to the mortgage industry, and it has not been favorable. So we're starting in a conservative Kansas, of all places, in Missouri. We're seeing some rulings recently that have come out not in favor of the mortgage industry. In fact, quite to the contrary. So we kind of stay tuned to that. I think it's more of a reflection of the times of what's going on as legislators look and try to come to grips with what can we do to not repeat what's happened. There are significant rumors or stories running around out there where MERS system has fallen apart. And but I agree with you, Joe, so much. It brings a level of efficiency to the industry. We want to protect MERS. We need MERS to be a for our industry to operate as efficient with tracking who owns a loan. And even more so, as we start looking at the rate of foreclosures, loans, short sales, this is just going to be impossible to try to track short of some type of electronic registry system. So we're all for it. And let's talk about another topic that I was going to be on Fox today, and there was another story that came up, and this I'll be on it at another time. But Fox was having me come on and talk about two things, actually. Joe, interest rates, we've already digested that one. But it's the shadow market, the shadow inventory of housing out there that has not yet gone to foreclosure. There, I was doing research for that broadcast that was to happen today. It'll happen later this week. And it was they were talking in one Wall Street article and broadcast that they did, or one online broadcast they did. They said there are people out there that are delinquent more than a year and have not been foreclosed upon. I know people that are delinquent nearly a year and have not been foreclosed on, and they're almost going, you know, is this too good to be true? There is a shadow market out there, and I'd love to get your thoughts, Alice and Joe, as to your thoughts of what you're hearing out there. Do you believe a lot of banks are holding on to product, not wanting to foreclose for a number of reasons?
I'd say servicers are in a catch-22. They're damned if they do anything, and they're damned if they don't. It'd be very easy to let people sit in the house longer than they would ordinarily. So, sure.
And I think too, you're dealing with, you know, if something like this doesn't have one answer to it, you can literally go by market and by lender and say which state are you in. In terms of what's the cause of it. So absolutely, I know it's out there that lenders have hung on to houses longer, but it can be a variety of things. Offers are pending, they're unreasonable offers, so they're trying to work through that. Customers who kind of get close to bringing themselves out of the foreclosure and fall back. I mean, one thing about servicing is no two situations are the same, but the servicers are just inundated right now, and in some cases I'm sure it's just that alone, that, you know, they don't even know that customer is still in there in some cases.
Well, you're so true, because they can. You only have so many hours in a day, and they only have so much staff. We were talking about FHA getting additional staffing, and many of the servicers are locked into a servicing contract where they're doing this for a quarter. If they're servicing their own product, and in the case of sub-servicers, they're doing it for less than the service fee. And there is an economic reality: is we can't afford to add other people into this process if we're going to continue to service these loans according to and be profitable doing so. So there's a number of factors going into it. We're seeing a significant evidence that there is a growing shadow inventory, and it is at some point in time going to be coming into the market. I read an interesting article this morning as I was getting ready for the radio program that said banks with a change of FASB rules are going to be forced to dump a lot of this housing inventory, the shadow market, wring it out of their system, and therefore put it into the market, thus potentially having a greater impact on property values. In other words, suggesting that property values will once again tumble down to another level, lower level. I think this is probably that there's a potential for that if, in fact, this FASB rule, and we'll do some research on it. We're getting an increasing number of bankers listening to our radio program, Alice and Joe. And so we are, you know, they're all saying, what are others doing? What's going on there? So I think as we start expanding our program content, we get more of the regulated institutions in the back of our mind as we plan this. So I bring that up. There is a FASB rule that's proposed, that's coming forth, that is supposedly going to force the issue so to get rid of the shadow inventory.
And Dave, is this the one that about putting the moving the off balance sheet vehicles onto the balance sheet, or is that the one that you're referring to?
I am not absolutely sure, because the article didn't reference the specific FASB rule, and I want to do some research on that, but it's something that we should also put out there, because that is going to have an impact whether you're part of a regulated institution or part of a independent mortgage banker.
Sure.
Housing inventories, property values, HVC, all that, which could relate anything back to the property values, is going to impact how we go about our industry, and we're already seeing appraisals being challenged because of where the market has fallen to. I think in markets like Texas, in other very stable real estate markets, you're going to see that the shadow inventory is pretty much non-existent. In markets such as California, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, those really hard-hit markets, I think there's a distinct possibility there's a far greater shadow market there than anyone realized. Again, shadow market is that product that's waiting in the shadows that has not come out of the market and has not been put out there, thus further, you know, the flooding the market, potentially depressing property values even further. So it's an interesting discussion. We'll be talking more about that. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program today. Before we wrap this up, Joe, Alice, is there any topics that we have not covered that are important, any headlines you've watched just since we started the program?
I'd like to ask Alice this because I've read that the MBA's raised a red flag about FHA, the FHA note, and it's allowing the servicer to collect interest through the month of payoff, and that being potentially a prepayment penalty. And how that relates to the
high-priced mortgage loans.
Yeah, the FHA's. MBA's concerned that there's enough FHA loans that qualify as high-priced mortgage loans that it's going to create a conflict between what you can do as a servicer and what the note tells you to do.
Well, right, because I think I'd have to check into that a little bit further to see, because FHA has always taken the position that fact that when you pay off an FHA loan, you always owe 30 days of interest is not a prepayment penalty. And so I have to check the MBA's position, because I did not see that this morning, and find out, you know, is that coming from the Fed, that they're saying, yes, that number has to be included in this calculation. The high-priced mortgage loan calculation being one that comes into effect October 1st. And so that's a great point. We'll double-check on that and follow up next week with everyone.
Okay.
Well, everybody, we appreciate you joining in on the program. It is I want to thank you for those of you who have been listening and keep coming back. I appreciate the many of you that have given us so much positive impact. It is having a broader reach into the market and to the point where we are getting interest from some pretty major producers who want to get behind the program. So keep passing the word around. I want to always thank Joe and Alice. And we miss you, Scott, so I know you'll be listening in somewhere along the way. Hurry up, get back. We welcome you into the program. But again, today, Alice, Joe, thank you so much for being a part of it. Let's just hope and go out and have a great week as we go and digest the issues, and we encourage you to tune in again next week for Lickup Lending. We'll be here to bring you the latest, hottest information on what's happening. Alice, Joe, thank you so much. Talk to you all soon.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.